Hello and welcome to the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology's course on Cellular Metabolism and Nutrition, a powerful model for self-healing. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I'm excited to welcome you here to study the basics of energy, the basics of cellular metabolism, and how that affects every function in the body, how that affects the energy of the person that you're working with. And we're going to study the in-depth look at the cell, how it creates energy via the mitochondria, and how you, as a practitioner, can help your clients to improve their energy, to increase their energy using nutrition. Before we begin, I just want to make sure that you're aware that the information that I'm presenting is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's also not intended as medical advice. It's intended as a sharing from my knowledge base, my experience, my clinical experience working with thousands of clients and patients to you. But it is in no way intended to replace medical care. So if you're on any medications or working with a healthcare professional who's prescribed those medications, then just make sure that anything you decide to do or change in your current nutrition health regime is bounced off that professional. As functional nutrition practitioners, you need to also be aware when you're speaking with your clients that you pass on this information, that everything that you're doing with them is education, that you are not diagnosing anything, you're helping them to assess the status of imbalances in their body, and then you're educating them about alternative ways to approach those that will help to restore the balance using nutrition and lifestyle.
When I speak about energy, I'm not always talking about energy like, I feel really energetic, I can go do this and that and, you know, run around the block and do all this work. Energy is also energy on a cellular level, and that's what we're here to talk about. On a cellular level, if your cells are low in energy or specific organs are low in energy, they're going to have low function. So I was speaking at a seminar that I was giving. It was just a little two-hour free seminar, introduction to health stuff, and someone had come in just out of curiosity because she thought she was fine, but she wanted to see what I was saying. And she basically said something like, I said, okay, so what is lack of energy? And people would say, I said, you know, it's more than that. Because if your cells are low in energy, you may be low in energy and not really know it. You may not think about it as low energy because maybe you're running on adrenaline. So if you're getting a lot of skin breakouts, your skin may not be having enough energy to do the healing and turnover. If you have constipation, the gut is sluggish. If you've got slow detox responses and every time you drink green juices, you get a headache because your body can't detox fast enough, that's low energy. So low energy is all the cells in your body, your heart. Low energy in the heart is poor contractility of your heart and inability to, you know, really get your heart rate going during exercise. And same thing, lungs and sinuses and head. There's all sorts of places where you can get low energy. So what things affect your energy? The mitochondria. And the mitochondria are present in every cell in your body, and they produce the energy for you. So they take oxygen and sugar, and they convert it into energy. So what affects your energy? Well, you have to have enough oxygen. What does that mean? Well, you need to be breathing fully and not doing shallow breathing, so working on your breathing and your respiration. You can get oxygen in foods. Some foods are high in oxygen. Live foods, a lot of green foods with lots of chlorophyll carry a lot of oxygen. That goes into your system. Good clean air, that goes into your system. If you're indoors all day, you're not getting enough oxygen. So oxygen is cornerstone, as well as glucose. Glucose kind of is plentiful. Unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't all get into the cells because of insulin resistance. And we'll be talking more about blood sugar imbalance. For those of you who have not been through the Before Be Gone program, we'll be going through that. But other things affect your energy levels. Neurotransmitters, imbalances in neurotransmitters, hormones, imbalances in your hormones, your immune system being imbalanced and not having enough support, having digestion that's either sluggish or impaired and elimination is not working properly and absorption is not working properly, that affects your energy. and your detox pathways. So all of these things go into affecting energy, and that's why throughout the course of our time together, we're going to be breaking it down, and we're going to be going through each and every one of these parameters that affect energy. So some of the causes in fatigue are exactly what we just talked about: imbalances in oxygen, neurotransmitters, hormones, mitochondria, immune system, digestion, detox. So hormones that contribute to fatigue would be thyroid and adrenal, but also sluggish liver. So the detox pathway is being slowed down. Having poor digestion or eating foods that really harm your digestion, cause inflammation in your digestion, cause sluggish digestion, that can cause you to be tired when you're recycling toxins. When your immune system isn't strong enough to handle all of the toxic assaults that come in, the parasitic and fungal and bacterial assaults, but also when it overacts and acts allergically, that exhausts you, and when there's an autoimmune going on, that exhausts you. So we're going to go into a little bit more about the mitochondria and the cellular metabolism, because that's at the heart of all this. And I think when you understand this, all of the other topics are going to come through brilliantly. So let's talk about cells. So you have your cells, and inside of every cell, it looks pretty similar, and outside of every cell, it looks pretty similar. And then they have different functions based on where they are located. So what you're seeing here in this picture, these little round balls on one side and then these little balls on the other, and in between are channels. And that's how stuff gets in and out of the cell. You can see a protein molecule sliding its way in, and a protein and carbohydrates chaining through. And then this between, there's what they call a lipid bilayer, and that's made of fat. And you know how people say you are what you eat? Well, it very much goes for your cells and the fats you eat. Whatever fats you eat become incorporated into that lipid bilayer. What you want it to be rich in phospholipids and really high quality, good structural fats. And if you're eating a lot of trans fats, there's no way that your body can create that. So fats are really important. And then there's channels, as those are just highlighted, that the channels are where the nutrients come in and the wastes go out. And then on top of the cell, on the top of the outside of the cell, are various receptors. There are receptors for insulin, there's receptors for thyroid hormone, there's receptors for estrogen and progesterone. And different parts of the body have different concentrations of the various receptors depending on the function of that cell. So it's important to have a good cell integrity. So this is giving you more of a look of what's inside the cell. And we have all these various things. The blue things with the swirly swirls, those are the mitochondria. They make your energy. They take the glucose and the oxygen that goes in, and they pop out ATP, which gives you energy. So they're really, really important. And there's lots of them in your cells. You can see on the outside where it says cell membrane. So the cell membrane is what we were just looking at on the previous side. That's the cell membrane. That's the up close and personal with the cell membrane. So once we're inside the cell, this is what you're seeing. So you see your mitochondria right there. There's the mitochondria. And the cytoplasm is actually like the gel-like liquidy kind. It's not really liquid, but it's kind of a gel-like substance within the cell, where all the organelles, these are all called organelles, where they float around. And there's functions for each of these. The only place I really have found anything good about the cell stuff is in textbooks. And I have this really cool textbook that I got called Advanced Nutrition and Human Metabolism. And so far, I like it a lot, and I found it for like $17. It's a $200 textbook. So I will put up that link to the name of that book. And it's really good to have a reference book where you can look things up in. With the internet, it's not as critical as years ago. Advanced Nutrition and Human Metabolism. And I'll put it up with the names of the authors and all. But it's just good to have. If you already have some sort of a good nutrition book, even if it's old, it's okay, because it's really
understanding the structures of things. If you have a really old textbook, you may be out of date and it may not have leptin and ghrelin and some of the hormones that have been discovered over the last, 20 or 30 years. But it's still good to have a reference book. But like I said, with the internet, you can find things on the internet. You know, 9 times out of 10, you can find what you're looking for on the internet. But I like having the books so I can touch them and I can flip back and forth with the pages. And it goes into a lot more depth than you're going to need, but if you're the type that really likes to have that depth, it's good for you to know. Okay, so we're here to talk about cellular metabolism. So we're going to be looking at the mitochondria, and then we'll give you a little bit of background on where you can find out more about all the rest of this stuff. I mean, you could just Google each of these things, lysosomes, the Golgi, but we don't have time to go through all of this. We'd be here for 5 hours. I wanted to give you this picture because I really liked it. They have what's called the hydrophilic region, which is the water-loving, and the hydrophobic region, which is the water-fearing. And so it just means that certain parts are attracted more to water and others repel water. And that has a lot to do with how things are transported into the cell. But it's important that things are able to be transported into the cell. Damage can happen, free radical damage and damage from chemicals and damage even from excess sugars and various things in our food supply can damage the cell membranes and can damage the layer of lipids in between the inner and outer layer of the membrane. And that's what gets you into trouble. So the powerhouse of your cell is this Mr. ATP. And I had this, I took it from one of my presentations that I do for, patient populations. But the thing to understand about ATP, they are wonderful, we need them. They take the sugar and the oxygen, they convert it to ATP. But as a byproduct, we get a lot of free radicals. So it's really, really important when you're looking for your cells to be energetic, when you're looking to create more energy, and when you're using and expending more energy, that you're making sure to protect yourself from the free radical damage, things like SOD and catalase and lots of others. And it eats up a lot of your glutathione. So it's really important that we have good antioxidant status to have good ATP. So here is good old Mr. Mitochondria broken out. We've taken out his outside shell and we're looking at the inside. And these swirly things on the overview picture that were swirly things are actually things called cristae. And they're folds, kind of similar to folds we have in our intestinal tract so that it allows for increased surface area. And that allows for DNA to expand and for the activity within the mitochondria to be, able to be expandable. So we've got the outer and the inner membrane. And we have DNA inside of the mitochondria, and we have ribosome, which is the RNA carrier, and then we have the matrix of the ATP. So what's happening in here is something called the Krebs cycle. It's actually called cellular respiration, and we're going to look at that in a little bit more detail. So the parts of your mitochondria, you have the outer membrane, which you saw in the picture, which is it's semi-permeable. And it's made of phospholipids. And anybody want to tell me where you can find what kind of foods contain phospholipids? It's really important to have good phospholipid content. So this allows the passage of ions, ATP, which is your energy, it's adenosine triphosphate, ADP, which is a precursor to ATP, which is adenosine diphosphate, and nutrients. And fats and lecithin. So lecithin is one of your best sources of phospholipids. And of course you need fats to make phospholipids, but it's a type of fat. It's a phosphorylated fat. And they're really, really important for mitochondrial function and also for brain function. Super important for brain function. Very good. So the inner membrane is permeable and it allows oxygen, water, and carbon dioxide to pass through it. The cristae, as I said, were the shelf-like folds. They're in the inner membrane, and they help in expansion of the mitochondria. So at times, you really need it to be bigger because you're really flooding it with glucose and oxygen and trying to get, like you're running a marathon and you need more energy going. You've got expansion going on. There's also the intermembrane space, and that's the space between the two, which is important for the transport from the outside to the inside. So first of all, going back to what's happening, you've got
the foods that people are eating, the nutrients that get into the bloodstream, the nutrients have to be able to go through the cell wall and into the cell itself, and that includes glucose and amino acids and some of the minerals. And what's the hormone that helps everything move from outside the cell to the inside of the cell? There's a particular hormone that helps your nutrients and your sugars to go from the outside of the cell into the inside of the cell. But once it's in the cell, it also has to be able to pass through the mitochondrial membranes and into the mitochondria. And again, phospholipids are really important. Insulin is that hormone that's important for the passage of nutrients from the bloodstream into the cell. So you've got to get nutrients from the bloodstream into the cell, then you've got to get the nutrients from the cell into the mitochondria. And we're going to see in a few minutes what some of those very important nutrients are to help with the production of energy that goes on inside the mitochondria. And then we have the cytoplasmic matrix, and that's that like kind of gel inside of the DNA as well. That contains your DNA molecules, your enzymes, oxygen, carbon dioxide, recyclable intermediates, and we'll see what we mean by that when we look at the Krebs cycle in detail. They're basically energy shuttles. They shuttle the energy from one molecule to the next until we actually produce these buckets of energy that can power us, and then water. So the cytoplasmic matrix is kind of like the sea in which all these other pieces are floating inside of the mitochondria. So the functions, what are the functions of the mitochondria? Well, the main function is cellular respiration. And that's the term that's used for the production of energy from glucose, or actually it's the release of energy from glucose. Because glucose, which comes in as a 6-carbon sugar, has all this energy in its bonds, but you can't do anything with it at that point. The glucose itself can't be used for energy. It has to go through this 3 stages of cellular respiration in order to have usable energy at the end. And that is glycolysis is the first one, the citric acid cycle is the second one, and the electron transport is the third. Glycolysis is the one that does not require oxygen, and it produces the net result from one molecule of glucose is 2 ATPs. It actually produces 4 ATPs, but it uses 2 ATPs to actually go through the process, so you end up with just 2. If there's a backup in the citric acid cycle, which is also called the Krebs cycle, say you don't have enough of the nutrients to help it make it all the way through, say you're low in B vitamins or amino acids or magnesium, which is important, or you're low in oxygen, meaning you're in an anaerobic exercise state, you're not exercising aerobically, you are only creating 2 ATPs from each glucose. And that's inefficient, and that's why you tire so quickly. When you get up to that really high maximum level, you just can't get enough oxygen to fuel the exercise, and you don't get enough energy, and you have to stop. That's why you hit the wall. And then the citric acid cycle gets pushed into the electron transport chain, and that's where we need things like CoQ10 to produce the ATP from NADH, which is also an energy source, and we'll look at that in a second. The other things that mitochondria do, its main claim to fame, of course, is the cellular respiration, the production of energy. There's also some cell signaling that it does. They manage apoptosis, and apoptosis is actually controlled cell death. So as the cells get to their natural end of life, you want them to die off. You don't want these old, ragged cells that don't function anymore to still sit there in your body. That's a source of toxicity and pollution. So it manages the controlled cell death. It also controls cell cycle, so the regulation of detox versus metabolism and nutrients. And then it monitors cell differentiation, meaning the cells themselves are going to reproduce and differentiate into the grown-up version of the cell and growth and development. So let's focus on cellular respiration. So we start out with glucose, which is a 6-carbon sugar. And then it's not in the heart of the mitochondria, is my understanding. But the enzymes in the cytoplasmic matrix initiate glycolysis. That 6-carbon glucose is oxidized down to 2 molecules of 3-carbon sugar. So that gives us 2 ATPs, 2 molecules of pyruvic acid, and 2 of NADH, nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. And that is a niacin-dependent substance. You have to have niacin. The nicotinamide is from niacin. If you're low in niacin, which is one of your B vitamins, which a lot of people are because they're eating a lot of processed foods, then you can't make enough NADH to fuel the next part, the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle. And they're actually, the whole point is to carry electrons to the next stage. So stage two is the citric acid cycle. And I have a couple of good pictures. And you're going to go, ah, help. And it's worth studying and looking at them. You're not going to memorize them for long. If I were to give you a test, you can memorize it for the test, and then you're going to forget the exacts, but you're going to get the general idea of it and what nutrients are important and why it's important to understand this. So it's also known as the Krebs cycle. And you take those three carbon molecules that have been produced during glycolysis. They're converted into acetyl compounds. Acetyl-CoA is one of them. The intermediate of this produces ATP and NAD and FAD. So these are some molecules that can be fuels in and of themselves, and they're produced as part of this cycle. And there, remember we talked about the intermediates, the transporters, they're electron transporters because we're taking these electrons and going through a cycle to come out the other end, these energy molecules. I'm glad I didn't have to design it. And then stage three is electron transport, where that's a series of electron carriers generated in the membrane of the mitochondria, and that comes from the Krebs cycles. I think what's happening is inside of the heart of the mitochondria is where the Krebs cycle is happening, and then you're going into the membrane where the electron transport is happening. And those ATP molecules are created, and it produces 36 ATPs. So if you look at the very top, this is acetyl-CoA, and up here is where glycolysis produces the acetyl-CoA and two ATPs, and those two ATPs can get burned or put into the cycle. And then these are the names of the molecules. So this is two carbons, then you have six carbons, and it's changing as it goes through the cycle, and you'll see it in more detail on the next chart. So it goes from citric acid to isocitric acid, and then it needs niacin in this step, gets some carbon dioxide produced, which is a waste, and then produces NADH, which can be a fuel in and of itself and can be helpful for cellular metabolism, and in fact is sold as a supplement for that purpose. Then you go into alpha-ketoglutarate, and that's another substance that's taken as a supplement. So when you take these substances, you fuel this electron transport Krebs cycle, the citric acid cycle. Again, you've got carbon dioxide as a waste, you have more NADH produced. Then it goes down to succinic acid, GTP, and FAD. Now, FAD is a flavonoid adenosine diphosphate, dinucleotide, and it basically is fueled by vitamin B2, riboflavin. Okay, so if you don't have enough, again, B vitamins. And then it goes down to fumaric acid, malic acid. That's another supplement that's given a lot in people who have fatigue. So when you see some of these supplements, now you'll understand, oh, those are Krebs cycle intermediates. That's why they say that those are good for energy production. You see NAD comes in a lot. So really, niacin is a really important. Then it goes into oxalate, and then it goes out into the electron transport chain. The next picture will show you in a better detail. But before we go into the next picture, let me talk about the nutrients needed for ATP production. You need to be able to get all those 2-3 carbon glucoses produced from the first part, the glycolysis. You need to get that through that cycle. And if you're missing any of these nutrients, you're going to be in trouble. So vitamin B3 is niacin dependent. That's nicotinamide adenosine dinucleotide hydride. And hydride is when they add on an H to it, hydrogen. B2 is the flavin adenine dinucleotide, so that's from riboflavin. There's a bunch of amino acids we'll see in the next picture that are all required for those Krebs cycle intermediates to take you through. There's CoQ10, which is important in the last piece, which is oxidative phosphorylation or the electron transport. And then magnesium activates a lot, very many of the nutrients throughout the steps throughout the cycle. Carnitine actually shuttles fat into and out of the mitochondria, and that's important. You want to be able to burn fat for fuel. And then ribose actually fuels the Krebs cycle. It's used in the pieces there. So let's look at this in more detail. This is where we come in from glycolysis, and glycolysis provides the acetyl-CoA, and there's byproducts and toxins produced all along the way here. So we go to citrate, and then in order to do this conversion from citrate to cis-aconitate, in order to go to isocitrate, we need cysteine and iron, really important. And then to go from isocitrate to alpha-ketoglutarate, we need vitamin B2, magnesium, and manganese. And you'll see here the NADH is on the other side. On the first one, it just showed it off to the side. But here we're showing you how it actually, this NADH actually goes down and fuels the electron transport and the final process. So you're feeding that NADH and using it. That's why some people will take the NADH in case they're deficient in some of these steps. That actually helps to fuel this a little bit better. So then when we go from isocitrate, in addition to the B2, magnesium, and manganese, in order to get down to the next level, we need glutamine, histidine, arginine, proline, and I can't read that one. I'll have to look that one up. That one's hard to see. Those are amino acids, and those help you with alpha-ketoglutarate, to produce the alpha-ketoglutarate. Then we have a whole bunch of B vitamins that we need to go to the next step, which is succinic acid. We need B1, B2, B3, B5, and lipoic acid. And then we also need leucine, isoleucine, valine, and methionine. So you can see the importance of taking amino acids or having efficient protein digestion so you produce amino acids to having your electron transport chain work. And then we need more magnesium to fuel the succinate. And then from succinate, we go to fumarate and produce FAD, which is that flavonoid, that B2 dependent. You see the B2 right there. And that FAD goes back in and fuels the final production. And then we have fumarate, which is threonine and phenylalanine. So you can see why I just listed amino acids, because just about all the essential amino acids and some non-essential ones are important in this chain. Then we go to malate, and again, we need B3 to produce the niacin, the NADH, and aspartate to get us to oxaloacetic acid, and then we're back out here, back around. So this is the recycling, and then this is the actual production, CoQ10. So CoQ10 is really important. So again, you don't have to memorize everything, but understanding how these things are being produced and why some of these supplements are being sold and told to people that they help with their energy. Of course, we want to really fuel and feed our mitochondria and keep from damaging the mitochondria. The mitochondria are very delicate, and this pathway can get very, very, very sluggish. Very sluggish. And you know what that feels like. Your brain can't function. Your body can't function. You don't have enough energy to make it through the day because you can't make enough ATP. Well, we damage our mitochondria daily. So the difference between us and the folks that just push supplements is that we know how to work with food, and we're going to be learning a lot more about how to work with food. It's a really important piece. There's a lot of functional medicine doctors are just going out there and giving people, here, take some amino acids, here, take some NAD, take some alpha-ketoglutarate, take some there, take da, da, da. But they're not sitting down with the person and saying, you know, if you just keep eating that bread and the pasta and the sugar and the Cheetos, you can't fuel this cycle, and you're actually damaging this cycle. So it'll get to the point where if you keep damaging your mitochondria, no matter how much of these nutrients you throw at it, if they're broken, they're not going to work properly. So, as I said before, the mitochondria produce a lot of free radicals. Well, they produce superoxide, and superoxide dismutase is the antioxidant that helps us to protect ourselves and break down those superoxide radicals. Those superoxide radicals are super damaging. Glutathione helps protect us. There's a lot of free radicals that are produced, and it's really important that you protect yourselves from free radicals. And the nutrients that are important are zinc, selenium, vitamin C, vitamin A, manganese, copper, sulfur containing amino acids, and that would include things like cysteine, methionine, the things that help you to produce more glutathione, which is like this master antioxidant. Okay? So these are the things that when you're talking to people, you want to make sure they're eating a whole food diet. Now, in addition, we saw all the nutrients that are required for inside the Krebs cycle. So if people are eating Wonder Bread, not only are they not getting enough B vitamins, but the Krebs cycle is just taking whatever it can find. So if you're constantly feeding a diet that's low in B vitamins, it'll say, okay, I found some here, I found some here, but it's stealing these B vitamins from various parts of your body to the point where it can't get enough. And then that function, that cycle just stops, and you get buildup of toxic intermediates. And a lot of those toxic intermediates are causing the free radical damage. And the thing is, there's free radicals that come out of the Krebs cycle anyway. And if you're eating a depleted diet, it's low in antioxidants. So in addition to not having enough energy and the fuel to go through the Krebs cycle, not having enough of the B vitamins, the amino acids, the magnesium, the manganese, the CoQ10, in addition, you're producing all these free radicals. You don't have enough to deal with it. So you need to be eating foods that are high in these nutrients and counseling people to get these as supplements if need be. What do you do to protect your mitochondria? Well, you really have to keep your sugars balanced, because if you're taking in too much refined sugar, and when I say refined sugar, I mean refined sugar and grains as well, because flour products throw off the sugar balance as well and don't provide enough of the nutrients. You need to be able to get a lot of the coenzymes that are needed for these. So that's your B vitamins, your B5, B6, B3, B2, really important. We need to be getting enough antioxidants. And these are in your really colorful veggies and your herbs and your wild greens, loaded with antioxidants and flavonoids that help protect. You need to keep your fats in balance. We saw the bilipid membrane, that in order for those channels to be open and allow the nutrients in and the waste products out, we need to have good fats. If we're eating hydrogenated fats, if we're eating heavy-duty saturated fats, heated fats that are loaded with free radicals and oxidized fats, then that's going to cause damage to those cell membranes. And they will become those cell membranes, which means that you're not going to get the transport in and out that you need. And it's going to damage the mitochondrial membrane as well. So I really will strive to have everybody on a whole foods diet with lots and lots of vegetables and avoid the environmental toxins. What are those? Well, as much organic food as you can, but also what are you doing around the house? Have people looking at that. And we'll be going through modules and modules and modules about that as time goes on in the program. Because those environmental toxins, the air freshener that they spray in the air, and the pesticides that they use on the lawns, and the perfume that they put on their bodies, and the products that they put on their skin to keep it moist. Well, you don't need all that stuff. You can just use coconut oil on your skin, and it provides much better nutrition to the skin, and it doesn't provide all those toxic chemicals. So avoidance of those things, because they poison the mitochondria. Certain medications poison the mitochondria. Caffeine poisons the mitochondria. Alcohol poisons the mitochondria. Certain medications like aspirin and things like that can poison the mitochondria. And if you want a complete list, just go Google what poisons mitochondria. So why do we want to prevent the free radical damage? Well, because the free radicals, they basically cause rusting of our cells, which leads to more free radicals, which leads to more rusted cells, which actually damages your DNA. If your DNA is damaged inside of the mitochondria, especially if it's damaged DNA, it's not going to be able to produce more healthy mitochondria. It's not going to be able to create the blueprint for a healthy mitochondria. It's going to damage the cell membranes, the free radicals. They're going to create oxidized cholesterol, which can lead to stiff arteries, which can lead to wrinkles. Oxidized cholesterol and oxidation can lead to wrinkles. And it can lead to brain damage, which can lead to depression, dementia, brain fog, etc. So we really want to control the free radical damage. And you make yourself up a little handout to give people to say, these are all the things that happen during free radical damage. And these are the things that cause free radical damage. So let's get you motivated. Which of these things are you going to start with first? So here's a list of some of the things that can damage your mitochondria. Sugar. plain sugar, because you don't have enough of the nutrients to make it all the way through the Krebs cycle, you get buildup of the toxic intermediates. Trans and heated fats, we've already talked about that one. MSG, monosodium glutamate, you know, very, very damaging to mitochondria, as are pesticides and preservatives and artificial flavorings that are added to your foods. So if we stay away from foods that are come in packages, and we teach our patients and clients to eat foods that don't have labels to read, right? Like, how do I read a label? Well, first of all, we should be eating foods that don't have labels. I mean, there are a few exceptions, right? There are some, you know, good, I don't know, raw food crackers that come in packages. There are, you know, sometimes people are in a hurry and they'll look for a can of beans, a can of garbanzo beans, but it should just say garbanzo beans on it. It should be very simple, the ingredients, because all those artificial flavorings, preservatives, pesticides, etc., are damaging to your mitochondria. You damage your mitochondria, you're damaging everything, because if the mitochondria cannot produce energy in your liver is not going to be able to detoxify. If the mitochondria can't produce energy in your adrenal glands, they're not going to be able to make adrenal hormones sufficiently, and your adrenals are going to fatigue, you know, good old adrenal fatigue. Processed grains, just like the sugar, they're depleted of all those nutrients that your body needs. Acid-forming foods, inflammatory foods. Inflammatory foods usually are those fats that cause a production of excess arachidonic acid. We'll look at inflammation in just a bit. And cortisol. Ooh, good old friend, cortisol. You know, cortisol is one of the biggest killers. It damages everything. And meanwhile, we're running around 24/7 worried about everything. And everybody, so okay, let's move on. Let's get into the really heavy-duty stuff in the course. We don't need to spend so much time on the stress. And we do need to spend so much time on the stress management, because excess cortisol levels damage everything. They damage the mitochondria. They damage the thyroid receptors on your cells. You know that they cause excess sugar to be released from stores, and then it causes excess insulin, which ends up damaging insulin receptors on the cells, which ends up damaging your blood vessel linings. So cortisol's big. We need to really learn to manage it. And listen to yourself. Listen to people. This is what I would teach you to do. Since you're going to be working with or already working with people, I'd like you to just start listening to the tone of their voice. The tone of the person's voice alone can tell you if a big part of their problem is caused by cortisol. There's an edge to the voice. There's an edge to it. There's kind of an irritability, kind of a skepticism, just kind of an edge. Versus, you know, when you're talking to somebody and they're just, oh, they have so much love in their voice and they just have so much caring in their voice. It's really different. And you can hear cortisol. I never said that to people before, but you can actually hear cortisol. And cortisol sounds like this. Cortisol sounds like this. Like, why are you telling me that again? Or like, okay, I'll do it. Is it going to work? That's cortisol. So learn to hear it and then learn to diffuse it and learn to talk to the person. Just calm your voice down in talking to people. You know, a lot of times I'll hear people say, my husband does this all the time. I'll hear him with an edge on his voice talking to my son, and I'll go, well, what's with the edge? And he'll say, well, this is the fourth time I've told him. Okay. So the fourth time and the fifth time. And yeah, we all reach our thresholds. But the point is, it's not good for us. So, and I just in mimicking, I just felt that surge throughout my body. I felt that rush. And you learn to feel it when you learn to calm yourself down. So this is where teaching people to meditate, to do heart math, to do yoga, to tap, do EFT, to do things to diffuse their cortisol levels. It's really important. Exercise is awesome for cortisol. If you get really frustrated and upset, go exercise to burn off some of that extra sugar that it just caused to be secreted. So when you're working with people to reclaim their energy, these are all the areas, and we're going to be going through each and every one of these throughout the course of the program. You need to be able to kind of get, when you're working with somebody, what's the place to start. If somebody comes in and they're eating this beautiful organic diet, and maybe there's one or two things off in their diet, you know, yeah, you can tell them to fix that one or two things, or you can look for what's the big rock, what's the big thorn that's causing the problem. As I've been working with people, I realized that someone may come to see me and their main problem is headaches, and I will maybe do some work with them, and I treat them with acupuncture and some food things, and they get better.
and they tell their friends, and their friend comes in to see me because they have headaches. And then I start working with them, and I start working with them on stress and the food and maybe some herbs. And they'll go, huh, how come you're not doing the needles like you did with my friend? So, well, because that's not where your main problem is. Yeah, everybody could benefit from the needles. But, you know, there's just so much time you could spend with people, and there's just so much money that they have to spend on themselves and the time they have to spend with you, that you have to pick your thorns to remove first. You got to pick the big thorn out first and get the person comfortable, and then you can work on the other thorns. And it's going to be different from person to person. So it's the food, the environment, the toxins, the movement and rest, the thoughts and attitudes, the structure and the energetics. What's this look like? It's just this another way of putting the seven pillars that I talked about. And the seven pillars over the years, I made this slide a couple of years ago and I just put it in here because I wanted you to see it. But over the years, I've come up with, oh, well, that seven pillars could be made to spell the word vibrant. How cute is that? So we played around with the words a little bit, but it's basically the same idea. So one last section of the cell that I want to talk about today is in the membranes of the cell. And this is in particular a mast cell, which has a lot of these inflammatory mediators. Mast cells are cells that get involved when there's an assault in your immune system. So if you've got hay fever, pollen, you're allergic to it, gets into your nose, it causes all these mast cells to get activated and create all this inflammation. And they basically produce a lot of histamines, which then cause the attack, and then you get sneezy and weepy and runny eyes. But inside of this membrane, and you may recognize this slide from a presentation I did for you during the inflammation presentation, when we did fats, and I talked about fats and inflammation, I created you a presentation that went through this. This is taken from there. They produce pro-inflammatory agents. Pro-inflammatory mean for inflammation. They produce inflammation. And you probably remember this chart as well, but this is your inflammatory cascade, which is going on inside your cell, inside your cell membranes. And it takes the fats from your diet. The left-hand side is your omega-6 side. And then the other side is your omega-3. So alpha-linolenic acid, ALA, is omega-3, and linoleic acid is omega-6. And you've heard me say before, we want to keep balance between the threes and the six, because what's happening inside of your membranes is this inflammatory cascade. And if you've got plenty of the threes, which are anti-inflammatory, it goes through this prostaglandin, which is anti-inflammatory. It produces a lot of nice firefighters, and it puts out the fire. So you get injured, firefighters come along, they put out the fire, and the injury gets healed. If, on the other hand, you have too much on the omega-6 side, if you have just the right amount of omega-6, it goes down to GLA, DGLA, and then this other prostaglandin, which is anti-inflammatory, and that's a firefighter. But if you have too much on the omega-6 side, it gets converted, the DGLA gets converted over to arachidonic acid. And the arachidonic acid is what produces the fire. You can see that down here. You can also consume arachidonic acid, and it's usually in things like meat and dairy products and poultry and eggs, and they contain arachidonic acid, and also peanuts. A lot of people are high in it because of what they eat that directly, but they also because they eat too many omega-6s, too much soybean oil and corn oil and sunflower oil and the nuts and seeds themselves. And I provided you in that lesson on fats with a chart where you can monitor yourself and then use that chart with your clients to see how are they balanced out. Maybe they need to substitute some of the sunflower seeds they're eating for some hemp seeds or chia seeds or flax seeds, or eliminate them altogether. So it's a really great way to do it. So this is all happening in your cells, and it's really important that you have the right balance of fats, so that you have lack of inflammation, which will destroy cells as well as anything else. Okay? And then we know that with drugs, we intervene at just a few points. So non-steroidals just stop the production of one of these thromboxanes without the other leukotriene being affected. But also, the NSAIDs and steroids too will kill the conversion of ALA to EPA. So if you're eating a lot of chia seeds, flax seeds, and all that, and you're expecting to be able to make enough EPA, and you're taking NSAIDs, like, you know, Tylenol and Advil and all those things, or you're taking the steroid medication, it's not going to happen. And you may just need to, with steroids, people should always be told, and NSAIDs, that they need to increase their EPA and also their DHA intake, because you're interrupting that conversion, okay? So the steroids are more potent because it interferes with this pathway up further and kills both sides, whereas the NSAIDs will only kill one side. But when you look at nutritionally intervening, and this is the beauty of using nutrition, right? We talked about the cell membranes, and we talked about the mitochondria and how it's important to have all these nutrients in there. Well, take a look at some of these nutrients. They're the same ones. So we keep the inflammation down at the same time we are supporting our mitochondria and our Krebs cycle. So we go from alpha-linolenic acid from flaxseeds, chia seeds, hemp seeds, and walnuts, gets converted down to EPA and DHA, which are found in whole pieces in the marine lipids. You can find them in algae and in fish. And that works at enhancing this whole pathway, which decreases the fire. Same thing on the middle. This enzyme is called delta-6 desaturase, the one that converts from alpha-linolenic to EPA and from linoleic to GLA. Well, if you've got all your B vitamins going, especially the B3, B6, B12, and you've got vitamin C and vitamin E and zinc and magnesium and biotin, then you're going to be able to do that conversion effectively. But if you're deficient, right, if your person's coming in and they're saying, well, I just read this thing that somebody said that there's no big deal, I can eat white bread instead of, you know, whole wheat bread. Well, I'd say you shouldn't be eating bread at all because it's inflammatory. But we have to look at where they're getting their nutrients from. And if they're eating a lot of processed food, they're not getting these nutrients. And they're going to be inflamed. The other things that are really helpful are some of the herbs like curcumin, which is turmeric, and ginger, and bioflavonoids, which are in quercetin is a bioflavonoid in onions and garlic, and there's all sorts of bioflavonoids in many of your, like in the rinds of the citrus, the inner white pith of the citrus is loaded with bioflavonoids. And tomatoes have lots of bioflavonoids, so do red bell peppers, so it's loaded in the food. So you're eating bioflavonoid rich foods, and ginger and vitamin E, which you can get in non-rancid nuts and seeds. And then, you know, EPA, of course, you can get from algae or fish, and then zinc and also selenium. So this is how you can modulate the function of your cells through nutrition. This is the inflammation pathway. We looked at the mitochondrial pathway. It's a powerful combination that we have here, guys. There are no drugs that can do this. These drugs are just interfering at one different place in the pathway and creating imbalances in the wake. So you have the most powerful medicine that you can offer. Of course, if you're working with somebody and they're on medications, you're not going to advise them to go off their medications and, you know, start to eat onions instead. You're going to work with them and, you know, work with the doctor, and you just have to be careful of the lines that you cross. But this is the most powerful medicine that you can get into.